Tired of complex and high credit card processing fees? It's time to simplify. Whether you own a big business or a small startup, Empower Payments can save you money. Streamline your payment process while saving money today with Empower Payments. Learn more at empowerpayments.com. That's empowerpayments.com.
Hour number two of the program, we get back into the Kansas City Royals. We do it with our man, Alec Lewis. He's brought to you by our friends at All Weather Decks, allweatherdecks.net. And relax, you can see all their great awards. You can set an appointment with Cass and the guys. You can even get the financing done right there. It's allweatherdecks.net or call Cass and the guys at 913-206-1974. Alec, how are you, my friend?
I'm good, Siren. I'm good. I'm actually walking out of an Omaha Storm Chasers contest. The Storm Chasers lost, and I'm exiting the stadium.
Oh, really? Okay. Good timing there, then. How did Vinny Pascantino do?
He looked pretty good. I think he had a couple base hits. I know he had a double. Nick Prado had a couple base hits, had a walk. Jackson Coar looked pretty good, honestly. It was the best I've ever seen a slider. And the fastball got more swings and misses than we've seen in the past. Ran into a little trouble at times, but got out of it. So interesting just to see the guys. There's definitely some talent down here for sure.
What should we be looking for? What are you gonna be writing on? Are those the individuals? Is it coaching, or what are we looking at?
No, I'm in Omaha for the College World Series. Been here for like 5 days, and because they were playing today at noon, and there's a college baseball game tonight, I just decided to pop over here. Probably won't write much. I wrote about Jackson Coar about a week or two ago, and just some of the pitching development stuff that they've done with his fastball. They realized that it was kind of running too much. They wanted to get more vertical movement on it, so they tweaked some of his mechanics a little bit. And it's obviously worked, not his last outing, but in I think five of his last six outings, he's been pretty good. Will it play at the big league level? Hard to say until we see it. But nothing too specific, just kind of checking in and seeing the guys, putting the eyes on them. You know how it goes.
Mostly just, milking the company teat for a free trip, huh?
I mean, you don't have to say that out loud. I mean, it's just... God almighty, Siren. Come on, help me out.
I'm proud of you. I want our listeners to know how you're gaming the game. I think that's important.
Not gaming. I'm grinding, okay? I've been on phone calls. I'm doing as much as I can to cover this team rigorously. And trust me, it is not the easiest to do that when the team is where it is. I'm eating well. Drinking well, you got me in trouble. Thanks.
I love it. Yeah, I better let the bosses know around here. I think I better get up and take a look at that Storm Chaser Club and see what we got.
Exactly. Thing is, if you don't spend it all, right. You don't get it the next time, right?
That's right. I mean, you got to spend the budget or they won't provide it next time. Is that what you're saying?
It's exactly right. I mean, look, the alternative was. Trip that is. So look, I'll ease the dime a little bit. I might use some for myself, but no, I was in Arkansas for a couple days and I drove here. I mean, I've been on the road, I've been on the phone. We're not going to minimize the work ethic here, okay?
Okay. You mentioned Coar having some issues there, but in the end, five innings, two hits, one run, four walks. That's more than you like, but he bounced it out with eight strikeouts. Royals pitchers as a whole are striking guys out more, walking guys less. I'm sure you've been, even while you've been on the road, keeping track of what's happening with the big league club. I'm going to ask this question, and I know you're going to at first laugh and you're going to say no, but there is a chance that the answer to this is yes. Is it fixed?
Mm-hmm. No. They're playing Oakland for three of the – I mean, no. No. Or is it fixed? I mean – the other thing, I mean, I know it's a snap called there, but, like, I mean, it's 1 week, one stretch of outings. I mean, because good big league pitchers do it consistently. And the Royals have discussed that, and Cal Eldridge discussed that, and everybody knows that. And so until there's a long stretch of meaningful time and meaningful games and meaningful moments and meaningful stadiums with meaningful crowds, and the guys do it, it's just going to be hard to just say it's fixed.
The Angels are one of like whenever it is fixed, like at that moment, will we know? No. But there will come a time when it is, presumably, right? Like I don't think it's never going to get fixed, and it starts somewhere. And I'm not listen. The answer is to say, can you definitively say so? No. But this to me is a really big step. I mean, strikeout to walks. There are a couple of different stats that I look at when it comes to pitching. One is your hits per innings, and linked with that are your strikeout to walks. And if your hits per innings are high, your walks better be extraordinarily low. You know, I think WHIP is one of the best indicators of a pitcher's success. And Brady Singer actually has a pretty good one at 1.19. You know, and I think your strikeout-to-walk ratio, if you have a high strikeout-to-walk ratio, it will eventually mean really good things for you on a mound. And that has been pretty good for like three games kind of across the board with Heasley, Bubich, Singer, well, Singer's numbers are all, but and Daniel Lynch. I mean, it does seem like we're kind of three games into them turning the corner. Can you, is it coincidence that all these guys seem to be kind of doing this at the same time? Or was there some kind of come to Jesus meeting? Is there a new what that everybody's like 2-3 starts into now suddenly, you know, having the kind of strikeout to walk ratios you want to see out of your starting pitchers?
Well, I mean, the most boring answer is like, I mean, and it's like the guys are still young, and they do have talent. I mean, that's the one thing. I mean, from the time they drafted these guys to the times in 2019 and 20 and last year writing stories about them, I mean, what is obvious is that other teams and other scouts were impressed by the Royals drafting this much college pitching. And the reason they drafted this much college pitching in 2018 specifically is because that was the strength of the draft. They were on those guys. They had history with the guys. And, again, like, they do have talent, and they do, but you can see it when Chris Bubich pitches against the San Francisco Giants, a really scrappy lineup. Like, he is going to grind through that game. I mean, Daniel Lynch, you can ask anybody at Virginia. I talked to Virginia coach Brian O'Connor two nights ago, and he was like, that guy is going to do every single thing he possibly can to ensure he's successful for himself at the very minimum. And so, like, you asked if it – I don't think it's a coincidence at all, because I do think these guys have talent, and they are navigating the best hitters that they face on a weekly basis. And I do think it is possible that strides show. And that was the hope going into the year. The fact that it's now showing after the team is essentially out of it, that's the tough part, I think, is, like, you wanted them to progress and perform in meaningful spots and meaningful games. Because until you see that, it's hard to believe that is the case. And if you're going to win the way they want to, that has to happen. I say all of that to say, like, you're right, 100%. Strikeout-to-walk ratio is huge. I mean, you can look at those leaderboards, rankings, and the teams like the Yankees that are winning a ton and the Rays. I mean, they're at the top of those rankings. And so to see improvements there is a without question a positive. There's no doubt.
Is it just they got tired of being beaten up by the fans?
I mean, I just think they believe that's an easy thing to say. I think they believe so much in themselves. I think, like, Daniel Lynch, you could see after a couple of rough outings, like, he was just tired with himself because he believes he's better. He knows guys who have done it around the league, guys like Shane McClanahan with the Rays. He knows Shane. Guys like Tarik Skubal with Detroit. All these are young guys that he came up with that he knows their stuff. He knows the analytics, the type of metrics that their pitches have, and he knows his grades up with theirs. And I think he's just kind of sick of not taking the step that he believes he himself can take. So I don't think it's so much the fans. These guys expect a lot out of themselves. That is without a doubt a truth.
Well, listen, I think part of it is just it takes some time in the big leagues. The Royals, it seems like all of their guys, it takes some time in the big leagues. It is possible to come up and perform at a high level immediately. It just doesn't seem to ever happen with this team. And I'm theorizing here, right, for conversation. I'm not making a declarative statement. But it does – listen, I will – no one will ever convince me that the fans didn't play an absolutely major role in the Royals finally turning the corner in 2014, in 13, and then again in 14, because they were backsliding in the first half of 14, and the fans were calling for everybody's job. And I took calls about Moustakas sucking and Hosmer sucking and, you know, Gordon, okay, he can, you know, he had one good year, but, you know, the fans were upset and they had had enough. And I think this town is known as a nice town, and I think it is. I think people are very, you know, kind people and they're patient. But I think once you've had enough, you know, you've had enough. And I don't think there's anything wrong with fans getting to that point. And I think they've been advancing towards it again here of late. And I think there's something to be said. And I think the idea behind Whit Merrifield and Salvador Perez is that there would be veteran guys and bringing in Greinke, and hopefully Keller should have been by this point. You know, veteran guys so that the young guys come in and everyone doesn't expect them to save the day. Well, we know that they weren't good enough, so there is a feeling, again, that the young guys are going to come in and save the day. But there's also this feeling of, because we know the current big league team isn't good enough, the fans look at the next wave, and they're so thrilled when the next guys come up. They've been asking for the guys. These are the guys, and they get up, and they're so positive about them. And these young players get to the big leagues, and what I see is guys who have spent, you know, anywhere from, let's say they start playing baseball at what, 4 years, what are you, six years old?
Could be three.
Okay, yeah, whatever it is. They get to the big leagues at, you know, somewhere between 21 and 24. They've spent 18 to 20 years of their lives where everything about playing the game of baseball is getting to the next level. It's really not about winning. Let's be honest. I mean, first of all, if you're good enough to get to the big leagues, you probably raked enough that your team didn't blow in Little League because you put it over the fence two out of every four, okay? So, you know, you've always been a pretty good team. You were never just piss poor. And even so, it wasn't about that you guys lost 16 to 11 because – everybody's slapping you on the back about the 4-for-5 with two homers and a double, you know, that you had and gunning a guy down at the plate. It's always about your success. And the carrot in front of you is not to win a championship in A-ball, which I believe they want to do. They're out there. They're keeping score. They're competitive guys. They want to win the game. But the real carrot is you're in A, get to double A. It's not to win a double A championship. You're in double A, it's get to triple A. And then when you're in Triple A, it's get to the bigs. Then it's stay in the bigs. And the winning in the bigs, and I've had numerous people in baseball tell me, the three stages of a major leaguer are, one, getting to the big leagues, two, staying in the big leagues, and then basically establishing yourself that the minors are no longer an option. And then three, get paid in the big leagues, and four, win in the big leagues. Those are the stages. Now, are there rare guys that skip those stages that the winning is just as important as all the other things? Sure. But none of those things aren't part of the equation. And I feel like the Royals organization, I wonder aloud here, and I'll get your thoughts, that they love their guys up so much, they slap them on the back and they get them here, and they just are sheltered from the real world that when you suck at the big leagues, you're going to get crapped on. And I think there's a bit of it's gotten really angry out here from the fans, and I wonder if that hasn't finally settled in, that it's not a lifetime appointment to play professional baseball, that you've gone through your stages and you're just going to be here and, you know, kind of half-ass it, whatever. When it comes around, great, because we love you no matter what, and the fans are the wake-up call. And you start getting booed, or you turn on the talk radio and people are talking about how you suck and they want to fire everyone around you because you're a failure. I would think that that's a motivator.
Well, first, I'm just enjoying listening. So I wish you could. I really enjoyed that. Second, I didn't mean when I was talking about Daniel Lynch and how much he believes in himself, and I think that's what his prime motivator. I didn't mean to minimize that. Fans should express whatever they feel.
Well, then, not to cut you off, but I do want to underscore. I like what you said about the guys he came up with. And they're having success. And, you know, I think, you know, we got a couple interns in here. And when they graduate college, if one of their buddies has got a job and they don't, or if they're, you know, second semester, one of their buddies has got a job and they haven't found one yet, that's a motivator. Like, you don't want your peers, you know, being way out in front of you. I do want to underscore, I think you made a great point. I think that's part of it. There are starting to be guys in their class that are having success, and that is definitely one of the wake-up calls. But I do think the fans are another one.
Yeah, no, and that's what I'm saying. Like, I don't think it's just – I do think fans expressing however they feel, I do think it – I mean, it matters. It's present. I think guys, for as much as they'll talk about not wanting to see it, I mean, they have family members who see it and send it to them. I mean, this is – that's how it works. And I do – I mean, I think – like I mentioned a couple guys, McClanahan and Scooble, and some might say those are like elite talents and they've gotten the big leagues and had success. But I mean, the Rays like seemingly do this often, and other teams seemingly, I mean, you're right, and that guys will come up and maybe they'll start slow, but then they'll kind of hit the throttle. And so, yeah, I mean, overall, I don't know in terms of, I always, I don't know, one of the things I've learned and just talking to a lot of people over these last few years, is like, I don't know if we can ever put our finger on just the internal, just the motivation these guys have literally just for burning within. And I know, again, like it's not, I know fans do have impact and they do, but I just think these guys like wear it. This is their livelihood. This is their job, yes, but these guys are known. I mean, their livelihood revolves around this. And I really think, like, they could take it to heart. When one of these guys struggles, I mean, you can see it, like, palpably in their face how much it hurts, because this is what they do. This is what they're known as. And so, yeah, I think all of the struggle and the continuous struggle combined with all of it, the fans, what they see in terms of peers, I think it has definitely – I mean, it's a fire that is burning. Now, does that lead to execution on the mound against good teams? It just – consistently, it remains to be seen as something that – for this team to be on the right track, it's essential.
We're talking right now with Alec Lewis. We're going to take a break. One more with Alec. He's in Omaha tracking the minor leagues of the Kansas City Royals. By the way, the Storm Chasers today. Oops, I went to a different scoreboard. Storm Chasers today losing to the Columbus Clippers 4-2. The bright spot in the bunch is Jackson Coar. While he struggled with his command, did go 5 innings, 2 hits, 1 run. 4 walks, but balanced that out with 8 strikeouts on the day. So good news on that. Overall, you like him to go deeper into games, particularly, against AAA. Nick Prado had a couple of base hits in this game, including a double, his 8th double on the year. Vinny Pascantino, his 16th double on the year, as he went 1-for-4. They do lose. By the way, Michael Massey also 1-for-4, the second baseman that was promoted recently from AA to AAA. But in the end, they lose. But still a couple of bright spots. We'll talk some more about the Kansas City Royals with the guy who covers them for The Athletic. Alec Lewis is with us here in the program. He's brought to you by our friends at All Weather Decks. But you get the point.
All right, the Jazz, end of the hour answer.
You sure about that?
I did. I had to. I didn't have the one.
You had to look, didn't you?
To grab the
show sheet.
You
had to look.
I did. Jazz, end of the hour answer. Who pitched the first National League perfect game of the 20th century?
Oh, my God.
So 1900?
Since 1900. Who pitched the first one of the 20th century?
Which began in 1900.
Yes, but the game itself wasn't in 1900.
Like, how am I supposed to have any
So
idea
it would have happened in, like, 1914 or something?
How about 1964?
No one threw a perfect game from 1900 to 1964?
In the National League. No one did.
Amazing. Really? That, I was getting ready to just be like, worst question ever.
I was going to say 1900 would have been like Frank Bohl in high school, but 64, he was already hitting the...
If the answer was going to come back, old Seven Finger Jones...
There had only been 4 at that point. Including Don Larson.
My dad wasn't even born when this happened.
Really?
Neither was I. June 21st, 1964, would later go on to be a senator.
A Washington senator or a United States senator?
United States senator.
An important distinction there.
Yep, that's true.
I mean, there have been two incarnations of the senators. I forgot. They didn't name the Nationals. They named them the Nationals, not the Senators.
Who did he play for?
Phillies.
Carlton.
Jim Bunning.
Nailed it. Jim Bunning. That's what I meant when I said Carlton. It was Jim Bunning. All right. That's good for the old fart baseball fans like us.
I'm going to look Jim Bunning up. I'm going to look him up.
He's pretty good.
I want to know what that Arsenal. Yeah, I'm curious.
There have been five in the National League since then, including one for the Phillies.
There's like 14 perfect games, right? Something like that?
Roy Halladay.
Yeah, there have now been, 21.
Nailed it. Right at it. 14. I was right there. By touchdowns, that's one away.
But the oddity, and when something's only happened 21 times in 120 years, you're going to have odd streaks. There were three in 2012, and there has not been one since. Philip Umber, Matt
Cain.
There
were three perfect games in 12?
In 2012, Philip Umber,
Halladay,
Matt Cain, and Felix Hernandez, the last one to do it. Roy Halladay did his in 2010.
Okay.
But three in 1 year and none in the 10 years since then? But again, when I see you're doing, when it's happened 21 times in 120 years, you're going to have weird little streaks. And that's what I exist for, weird little streaks.
Alec,
thank you.
I know you said you're not really up there. You're just kind of taking in Omaha. Let me run this theory by you. I thought it was a pretty good one. I had not connected these. By the way, we're playing for Great Cajun Food from Jazz. I-70 at 291, 39th and State Line, and out at the Legends. Great live music, incredible Cajun food, great service. That's what you get at Jazz, a Louisiana kitchen. Get there tonight, whether it's with the whole family or just a couple of buddies having a couple of pops with some apps. It's a great spot, locally owned and operated, Jazz, a Louisiana kitchen. I like this. Corey Anderson is targeted Friday as Vinny Pasquantino Day. The Royals will be in town. It's the Big Slick event, which the fans always like to come out for. And it also is a time that they're playing the Oakland A's. So maybe the easiest transition for Vinny Pasquantino to make his debut. Do you expect him to be up on Friday? And is that why you were really there? Was doing all your background so you can hatch a bunch of stories on Friday with quotes from Pasquantino and all kinds of guys that played with him and coached him?
No, I'm not that sly. But I do believe last week or 2 weeks ago, I think it was 2 weeks ago, you asked me the date at which I thought he would be called up. And I don't know if you have access to what date I said, but I think I said the 23rd or 4th or whenever they're back in town. I think that's the 24th. I think that's what I gave you. The theory is fantastic. I think it makes sense because I'm not really sure it's made sense that he would be in the big leagues for some time now. But I know they've discussed the amount of at-bats, which I think he's reached that number. I know they've discussed the one pitch that he hasn't been able to hit. Not really sure what that one is. I've thought since spring training he seemed like the type of guy who could compete at the big level. So why not Friday? Sure.
Yeah, I also think that teams are feeling like they you know, again, it's not a hard date on when the Super 2 is, but because if guys go back down, then the date it depends on. You have to get to the end of the year to know who the top 20% are, right? It's the top 20% of guys that don't qualify for arbitration get an extra year. They go ahead, they get an early arbitration year. But we're
it's not over a one-year span. Like, it's until you reach, like, the point at which the cutoff is. So, like, he could come up and then play this year, and then if he plays all of next year, then it's the percentage of how much he's played compared to others who have been called up.
Yeah, so my point is you don't have a hard date. Like, you don't know. And like I said, if the guy ends up going back down, then you can send him back down and mess with it if you wanted to. But if anybody definitely clocks that kind of thing, it's the Pittsburgh Pirates. And they just brought up their big shortstop. I mean, and literally big shortstop. He's 6'7".
6'7".
With his 97-mile-per-hour rifle.
Yeah.
From short that I saw the other night.
I had a player at AAA tell me about him. I've never seen a guy on a baseball field who can do the things like he's like the Giannis of baseball, really. It's kind of crazy.
Yeah, it is. I mean, he's kind of a freak show. But the Pirates, like I said, they're definitely clocking that kind of thing. I mean, it might just be as simple as the Royals are starting to play that game, right?
I mean, I guess it could be. I haven't literally directly asked that question, so it's my job to do that and ask that type of thing. It's definitely in the psyche of mine, just in terms of, like, with what Vinny's done, it's hard to truly understand it. And I think, I mean, someone said to me, and it made sense as hard as it is to hear because of how obvious it seems that Vinny is ready and has been ready, but like you can never really to give a guy more minor league at bats, it's not really gonna be such a detriment to them beyond like if they know they're ready and you're not directly explaining to them why you don't believe they're ready, and then it gets dicey between the relationship between the player and the organization, then it can get bad. But otherwise, I mean, more at bats, I don't know, a guy, it really probably can't do so much damage. So I don't know.
Any thoughts? I mentioned the fact that they've got a number of guys that are putting up good numbers that are like old for their slots. Like, who's the catcher I talked about him the other day with Ranny?
Logan Porter, maybe?
Yeah, Logan Porter, who's like 26 and in, is he in high, he's in double A, right? Do you get a sense at all that maybe everyone's kind of holding their course where they're at to make sure that their numbers are as big as possible because the Royals may make a deal where they go and actually acquire talent, big league talent, that it might not just be them selling off Benintendi, but at the trade deadline, they may actually try to make the move for, whatever they think finishes off the roster, whether it's a they might be buyers from a team that's selling, whether it's a center fielder or a frontline starter. Do you get any thought that might be what they're doing with how they're holding some guys in the spots they're holding them?
So I'm trying to understand. So you're saying, you think they're keeping Logan Porter at double A, so his numbers look good, so you can package him?
Well, yeah, we always hear how, the framework of this deal kind of got going in spring training or at the winter meetings, and, that you kind of know what teams are interested in what. And if you know you're going to have to put some, let's call them fringy prospects into it, which, Michael Massey is up to AAA, but he's not one of the top prospects, right? They may think so, but around baseball, people at MLB Network aren't like, let's get our Michael Massey update. Pascantino's risen to that level, right?
Yeah,
people around baseball are talking about him, but no one's talking about Michael Massey. No one's talking about Logan Paul. And these are guys that are – or who was the Cuban center fielder?
Logan Porter.
Yeah, Logan Paul.
Logan Paul.
Is anybody talking about Logan Paul?
Cuban
no.
Center fielder.
Not this week.
Cuban center fielder Daron Blanco.
Yeah, Daron Blanco. But I mean, if I thought I was going to be able to use those guys in trades for something, then I would want their numbers to look as good as possible before I end up making that deal.
Yeah, I just don't think, I was having a conversation with a scout for a National League team the other day about guys like Logan Porter. And, just the reality is, scouts, yeah, they look at the numbers and it might key them into something that they're not seeing. But I think what they're looking much closer at is, age is potential projection, is, what type of ceiling this guy has, what he's struggling against. Is that something that big leaguers can exploit? Rather than, okay, this guy's batting .330, so we're really all in. I think Logan Porter is a great story, and what he's doing, I think, just is indication about it. It's hand-eye coordination, cognitive ability, but I don't think scouts are just swooning over a guy just because he has .330, and so I don't think that sets the Royals up to package a guy like him or really other. Michael Massey is a prospect within the system. I think Keith Law would have him in the top 20 Royals prospect, 10 Royals prospect, but I still think there are scouts who question, is he an everyday guy? Can he face left-handed pitching every day? He's a second baseman. What's the future potential of that? So I know I'm rambling a little bit, but I don't think a guy just hitting .330 is – I think teams evaluate at such a granular level that those types of numbers are not just going to sway another team to throw some valuable piece in.
Will Michael A. Taylor be dealt? Because I've read a couple of things that are now starting to target him. They're starting to, it's getting far enough into the year, they're starting to buy into the fact that his new approach isn't just he's getting lucky. It's not just a hot streak, that he's fundamentally changed his ability to judge the strike zone and cut down on his strikeouts, increased his walks, won a gold glove last year. Does Michael A. Taylor get dealt in your mind? For me, what I've heard from the Royals in the past, they will view him as virtually untouchable, that somebody's got to grossly overpay to get him. And to me, that's a little bit scary, because if you believe what you've done with Michael A. Taylor is something you can replicate, you can do again, Why wouldn't you move him for top young talent and then just go do it again with another center fielder that's batting 220 that has those tools, right? If you really believe that you're part of the equation of making this happen, you should be very eager to trade Michael A. Taylor beyond to the next reclamation project and add to your overall farm system depth. My fear is that they look at it and go, oh, my God, we got lightning in a bottle. We're not letting go of this guy.
So I do think he's a valuable trade asset, and I definitely think the Royals will listen. But the one thing there that you said that I think they would definitely balk at, and I think I would for sure too, is like you're not going to find many guys with that type of ability in center field. Like guys like that do not come around very often. Just who can also do the types of things he's done at the plate this year, and I do buy he's doing some different drills. He's kind of adjusted his approach to think more about his strengths, and I do think that's sustainable. He's a good clubhouse guy. He's been on a World Series winning team, and I do think other teams will definitely show interest. It's probably going to end up, are the Royals going to be more transactional? They've talked about it, and here's really kind of the first test to see how realistic that idea might be, and also what type of value does he really have? I mean, one of our other writers reached out and asked what type of value, and it's an interesting one. It's a question I will obviously pose to scouts, and I do think you could acquire maybe not a top 100 talent, but definitely impactful, potential projectable guys if that's the route the Royals choose. So I think, if they weren't listening, that would probably not be the best strategy.
That's quite possibly the most contradictory response you've ever given.
What? In what way?
Well, because in the same phrase you said they would push back, and I would probably agree, that kind of ability in center field you just can't find, and then said, but, what can you really get for him? Then what the hell? I'm going to reiterate, the Royals are near the top of all the defensive metrics, and they're not winning. Like,
right,
stop. And they signed him to 1 year, $1.75 million. What, at age 30.
So that's not his contract.
That's what they signed him for in 21. That's absolutely what they signed him for in 21. And he was younger then than he is now. So he can't possibly be getting better in center field in his 30s. So this idea that he is somehow this generational talent is ridiculous.
No, but I'll give you this perspective that they've talked about in the past. And I think it's when they've discussed this. And it makes sense to me just listening to it. And I'm not saying that to say they shouldn't trade him, but I'm saying in the past they have discussed that trying to break so many young pitchers in and develop young pitchers at Kauffman Stadium, to have a guy who can snag fly balls in center field out there is a boon for the young pitching development. That's something they said.
You're right. They all hit the ground running. I mean, it has been smooth and easy.
I know. Don't crush me for that. I'm just telling you. Like, I don't know. That's something that makes sense and sounds good. Like, obviously, if the guys are pitching well when it's working, but it hasn't. And I don't say that to say I don't think the smart move will be trading him if the type of return is of substance really at all.
Yeah. You did say. Go ahead.
I don't know. I think you're being a little too. I don't know. Like, I'm just trying to provide as much context as I can. I don't know. Be nice, please.
I think you're just not used to people listening to your answer.
No, that's not true. What do you mean? Maybe you're just saying, maybe that comment is saying you're not used to people reading your stuff.
One of the things I tell, and this is top of mind, like I said, because it's intern season around here, but, you prepare for the interview so that you can listen to the guy you're asking questions to's answers. Like, I hear a lot of people that I know, if you say, if you're responding and your response is, I ask you about Daniel Lynch and you're like, and he's had his struggles and, that's why they're going to fire Cal Elder tomorrow because he hasn't been able to reach Daniel Lynch. And I go, hey, when are they bringing up Vinny Pascantino? Because I've been sitting here the whole time not listening to what you're saying and trying to think of my next question.
Right.
You miss some of the obvious. So
100%.
I like to think I'm prepared for our conversations. And so when you meander through, Contradictionville, I bring it up because I think it's I think it's an interesting perspective. Like, I'm with you, and I get, and they do say that. You are right. I've heard the same thing from them, that it's important to have it. But I think they go to a fault on some of those things. You know what I mean? Get good talent back for Michael A. Taylor, good talent, right? Like, you do it.
Yeah, and that's what I said, and I'm trying to give some of their perspective, some of what I'm seeing, some of what I'm hearing, and that's how I meander through Contradictionville, which is not the place you want to be.
You did say, and I agree with it. That was part of the answer, was it not?
No. I don't
roll the tape.
Is he rolling it back? That's fine, but I think I said I can understand it. Like, I can understand. I try to understand. That's my job. These people have been in baseball for 16 years. I played until seventh grade, so I better listen, and I better try to learn something.
Okay. Time for our final four with Alec Lewis here from The Athletic. He's our Royals insider. Our final four brought to you by the University of Kansas Health System, the official healthcare provider of your Kansas City Royals. If you have an urgent orthopedic or sports injury, the University of Kansas Health System can see you quickly. Learn more at kansashealthsystem.com/sportsmedicine. I will start you with this. What the hell position did you play in seventh grade?
I played a little bit of shortstop, a little bit of second base. We had an older coach who was harsh. He told me, he used to call me Jared, not really sure why. Said, Jared, you throw like you have a broken arm. It was.
And he put you at short and second.
I could play, and I was a leader on the field.
I can just tell you, laughter was elicited by everybody, the smiles, the laughs.
I mean, you're poking. Like, you didn't see. You didn't. I wanted to pitch, and I believe I had the command that I don't know. I think I could develop arm strength. I didn't know what weighted balls were. I don't know. I will go to my grave thinking that if they had allowed me to continue to pitch, like, I could have done something. But it doesn't matter, and no one really cares. So I don't know why I'm saying it.
So you're the Uncle Rico of Little League Baseball.
No, I'm not. Like, no. I.
You could have won state.
Like, I wasn't,
you would have been scouted.
No doubt in my mind. No.
Right now, we would be interviewing you as the flame-throwing, ace of a baseball staff.
No, there's a reason I meander through Contradictionville and not through lineups, okay?
Okay. I like that.
Or a power lefty out of the pen, like Asa Lacy.
I'm not even going to. Did you hear that comment?
Yeah.
Okay.
His silence is deafening.
Well, it's when you package it with Kyle Zimmer and Luke Hochhaver.
No, but I got to be honest. I've really kind of been off. I mean, I've been at the College World Series. It's been 5 days of really good, like, talking to different people.
I really enjoyed it. I know you have. And Dayton Moore had a press conference, which I very much appreciate him talking to the media, at the Jewish Community Center, one of the fields that his foundation put together and is helping spread, the passion for baseball and softball for boys and girls, which I think is great. But one of the things he brought up, Asa Lacy, and he said he's going to be part of a championship pitching staff, be it as a starter or a reliever. And, I mean, that was like somebody taking a hammer through a window to me. And we're already talking about reliever for the number four pick in the draft. Like,
I don't know. I've had a couple conversations with scouts over the last couple months about Asa in general. And, I mean, there's definitely concern just about the injury history and I think some of the stiffness with the delivery. And I think they think his stuff is – Dayton said it in the past. It's just like some of the best stuff you're going to find, but it's just a matter of staying on the mound and doing it fluidly and consistently. And he hasn't done that, and that leads you to believe that reliever is definitely it's a possibility. Yeah.
When will Nick Prado make his debut with the Royals? Give me a date.
Man, that's a good question. It is.
Because we know Friday is going to be Pascantino night. Corey Anderson is. I like the logic behind what Corey had, so.
Okay.
But when Prado?
Prado, maybe a month from now. Some series, they're back home about a month from now.
7/21?
Yeah, are they? Yeah, they play. No, they don't play that night, Seren. They play. They play the Rays on the 22nd. That would be a tough introduction, but maybe the 22nd.
Okay, 7:22. I'll put you down for 7:22. I think that's early.
Yeah, that's fair.
He smells September-ish to me.
No, but the one thing I will tell you is, like, the strikeout numbers, you've talked about it a lot. And like, yeah, he's striking out, and he did today to end the game. But it's that number that you see is – and I'm not just, like, shilling. I'm just telling you from people I've talked to on other teams, like, the way he's arriving at those strikeouts, it's not like he's just whiffing at everything. It's just kind of an approach thing and him looking in his zone. So longer conversation than we probably have here, but – just want that context there.
Okay. I think it's fair. I appreciate the context. Are you watching the College World Series?
Yeah, I've been covering it. I've been here since Friday. I've been talking to a bunch of college coaches and scouts and people involved, and I've had a hell of a time. I've loved it. I've loved being up here. There's a purity to it that I've really, really enjoyed. So, yeah.
All right. Finally, Triscuit or Wheat Thin?
Oh, wow. That's good. I kind of like a Triscuit.
There you go.
I kind of like a Triscuit. Like the Wheat Thins, the one thing about the Wheat Thins, they, like, get cakey in your teeth a little bit too much.
There you go.
The Triscuit, I've always loved Triscuits, a little, like, low-key.
And, again, we're not hating on the Wheat Thin. We're just pointing out that the Triscuit is better. Right? I mean, that's all.
Yeah, right. I have nothing. Right. Wheat thin, it's good. If you have some of those and I'm hungry, like, I'll grab a scoop handful and I'll throw those down. But if I'm having the choice, Triscuit.
Yeah, there you go. It's so much more useful, too, when you get into
the crunch. Like, you don't get a crunch like that all the time. It's a different texture.
That's right.
That it's just an experience that I feel like is valuable at times.
It's a man's cracker is what it is.
Now I want a box of
it's a man's cracker. Well done. I'm proud of you. You're all grown up.
Thank you.
Alec, great
Thank
stuff, you. Buddy. We appreciate it. We'll let you get back to work. We'll talk to you next week.
Thanks, Aaron. You guys be good.
All right, you too, buddy. Alec Lewis from The Athletic. He's brought to you today by our friends at All Weather Decks. You can see Cass and his team online at allweatherdecks.net and relax. All right, wrapping up hour number two here in the program. Coming up next hour, Tim Grunhardt will be with us here to talk a little Chiefs football, get his thoughts. The mini camps are in the rearview mirror. It's now on to St. Joe. What does Tim think? We'll look at the schedule maybe a little bit, peek at that. Tuck if he's got any thoughts on where things are right now, but we'll get into the Chiefs with Tim Grunhardt. Coming up in the 5 o'clock hour, Mark Gubiza, of course, former Royal, turned color analyst for the Anaheim Angels.
World champion, 20-game winner. Not many guys have done both for the Royals.
No.
In fact, I think the list is just two, right?
Him and Saberhagen?
Yeah.
I think so. Because when was the last time somebody won 20 for the Royals?
I think it was Sabes in 90 or 89.
Good Lord. Yeah. Paul Berg got to like 18, right?
Yeah.
It's been that long?
Yep.
Oh my God. Wow. I do think Michael A. Taylor, and I heard there's a great piece, if you missed it, go to the podcast, The Zone, today, 810WHB.com. And I want to say it was in the 12 o'clock hour. Jason, or maybe it was the 11 with Les Norman. I can't remember anyway, 11 or 12 o'clock hours with Les. And Jason was detailing the list of just how few guys the Royals have traded in the month of June. Productive guys that they have unloaded going into a trade deadline. And in particular, in years that they weren't winning, where it's like, well, wait a minute, you know, this should be a fire sale here for you. And I Michael A. Taylor is a tremendous success, right? It was one of the positives I had when Randy and I did the Kauffman Corner podcast Sunday night. One of my positives was Andrew Benintendi and Michael A. Taylor. I don't think either one of them are what I would call bricks, like in building a foundation. I don't think they're bricks, but I think they're both good mortar, right? And if you can get a few bricks.
They both played on world championship teams.
Yeah, if you can get a few bricks, Bobby Witt Jr., you know, Salvador Perez hopefully still is. He's going to get back to hitting, you know, like he did the last couple of years. MJ Melendez somewhere in the equation. Hopefully Vinny Pascantino is going to be that. You're going to need to go out and finish off your roster and find those guys. Like, the Giants have been great at it. Some of it is they find the right guy. Some of it is they get a guy who's okay and they make him better. Well, the Royals have done that. You know, I cited Jock Peterson and how they just bat him against right-handers and how effective he's been for the Giants. Michael A. Taylor has been a great find and development. Now, listen, they're the ones that know, and Michael A. Taylor knows, has that development gone on with people in the Royals organization or on his own in the offseason and in his own time with somebody else? I don't know. But it has happened on the Royals' watch. They get credit for, if nothing else, not screwing it up. For me, success. Mm-hmm. They sign a guy on the cheap, 1 year, $1.75 million, then sign him for 2 years, $9 million, I think it is, the next time out, and he's been very good. If you can do that and you believe that in what you're doing, you will trade him for good young talent. Not for a bag of baseballs, but if you can get good talent. And most of the things that I'm reading right now is there is a feeling there's enough teams in contention, and with the extra wild card, that there are enough teams in the market to go get a center fielder, that there should be a pretty good demand. And if you got a couple of teams bidding for him, if you believe you can redo Michael A. Taylor, you will trade Michael A. Taylor. I think it's kind of a defining moment for the Royals in their development.
All right, who was the first rookie to have two 100-yard rushing games in the postseason? Brought to you by Joe's Kansas City Barbecue.